Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Out Your Back Door Podcast. I am your host, Jace Martinetto. And yeah, I'm going to say it because I say it every single week, but I have another amazing episode for all of you. And I just, this week I have Ashley Bredemis on the show, and she was stoked to be on the show. I was stoked to have her on the show. It all came together, and you'll see it was just an amazing conversation, and she opens up and shares a whole lot about what's currently going on in her life and everything else, which is like the main reason she's on this show, is because that life that I'm talking about is an amazing life. She turned from being an engineer living down in Florida to now owning a summer camp at the end of the Gunflint Trail. And we just dive really deep into that whole story of how that transition happened and how basically she just found the Gunflint to be home, with the Boundary Waters as her neighbor and the Superior National Forest as her playground. I mean, What cooler living scenario in Minnesota could you ask for? But anyway, I don't know many people that have to take a boat out to their house or their living establishment, but Ashley does that regularly. So so you know it's going to be some fun stories. But anyway, I also wanted to just give all of you tuning in just a quick thank you. You've been doing, you've been making Out Your Back Door so worth it to just keep sharing these stories and these people and these adventures with all of you. It is like everything I was hoping Out Your Back Door would be, plus some. And you're all incredible. Keep spreading the word about Out Your Back Door, and keep spreading that love, and it will continue to grow, and it will continue to be amazing. I cannot thank you enough. Give me a like and a follow on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook. I do all of my communicating through Instagram for the most part. So if you want the latest and greatest and the best experience for Out Your Back Door, you're going to want to follow me on Instagram. Tune in as much as possible, as well as check out that website. I have some cool videos and some Minnesota content and all sorts of fun stuff up there. So go give it a look, go check it out, and keep spreading the word. You're all doing the most amazing job of just being awesome people. So so keep it up. Enough about that, though. I have Charlie Parr in this episode playing Over the Red Cedar as the transition tunes, and that just pairs about as awesome as you possibly could ask for with this episode. So anyway, per usual, grab your favorite beverage, download this episode, go to your favorite spot, go on your favorite hike, go on your favorite walk, drive, bike, whatever it happens to be. But you know what? You're about to enjoy the heck out of this episode, because here's what Ashley Bredemis has going on right out your back door.
Yeah, I can't imagine not having grown up in Minnesota.
I enjoy hearing those stories of, you know, where it all began, you know.
Saw two huge moose right away in the morning.
On what's been recorded as the coldest day of the year in the coldest part of the nation.
This is one of the gnarliest things I think there is about the North Shore surfers.
The Great Lakes and beyond.
Watching Timberwolves and drinking beer and
people having fun. That's what it's all about.
I am from the Twin Cities originally.
I'm born Iron Ranger. I was born Hibbing.
Main Street and Ely. Osseo.
Duluth.
We grew up in Brooklyn Park.
I'm from northern Minnesota, Grand Rapids.
You can go out your back door and have an amazing adventure.
People need to be dreaming about adventuring more than ever right now.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Out Your Back Door Podcast. Today I have a very special treat for everybody. I have Ashley Bredemis on the show, and she has quite some stories for all of you. So Ashley, why don't you go ahead and say hi to everybody and tell everybody a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Hi, everybody. Oh, that was quite the introduction, and I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, what a treat for me to be here. I actually am sitting in my cabin right now at the end of the Gunflint Trail, actually past the end of the Gunflint Trail on the Seagull River, talking to you guys, which is where I live year-round now, which it hasn't always been that way. if we back up a few years, I was working as an engineer in Florida and Alabama, and I'm from northern Minnesota, Grand Rapids area.
Nice.
And yeah, I'm sure we'll dig into the story.
Absolutely.
But
yeah.
I have found myself at the end of the Gunflint Trail owning a children's camp for boys. So
awesome.
Here I am.
That's great. Yeah, we're definitely going to dive into all of that. But before we do, I'd like people to get to know you a little bit better. What are some of your favorite hobbies? I mean, the Superior National Forest, the Boundary Waters. I mean, you're in a pretty awesome place just for exploring and recreating. What do you kind of do for hobbies up there?
Yeah, well, the only reason we didn't record this just the other day is because I was out in the Boundary Waters on Seagull Lake just for an overnight camping trip. So I do a lot of camping and paddling, as you naturally would living up here. We were actually rock climbing on Little Palisades on Seagull. So some rock climbing, those are all summer things. But in the winter is actually my favorite season. So we ski at Lutzen a lot. I ice skate on the river. I just enjoy the snow. I've got a big 100-pound shepherd dog named Arlo, and she has got her very first dog sled this winter. So she
nice.
Carries our supplies across the river in the winter months. But yeah, all things outdoors. And then I guess photography, you'd say, is outdoors as well. I do a lot of outdoor photography and reading. Those are
that's
kind
awesome.
Of my hobbies.
Well, that's quite the list. I mean,
I dabble. I'm not phenomenal in any of them. I just started my very first garden this year, and it's a little rocky. We'll see how it goes. But like I said, I like to dabble in all the outdoor things.
That's awesome. Now, you just listed off, you know, a bunch of different places too. Do you have a favorite place around Minnesota that you like to just, I mean, is there any one place that's your favorite, I should ask?
Well, the Boundary Waters Canoe Area is my place, especially out of the Gunflint Trail, anywhere out the Gunflint Trail. And then as far as like a town, a city, Duluth is my place. I love Duluth so much.
That's awesome. Yeah, I see you post a lot about coming into Duluth and checking out the thrift stores and stuff like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. You guys have the best thrift stores. Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, I it's funny because like my favorite place in the whole world is just pretty much everything north of Duluth there up the shore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been all over the place as far as travel goes, but yeah, my heart definitely pulls me up the shore and up to the Superior National Forest, and yeah, more specifically a lot of times to the Boundary Waters, but yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, anything north of Duluth, you're right, is just like this magical place, and I feel like people that aren't from Minnesota, they can't imagine that it would look the way it does.
Right.
I was just climbing on Palisade yesterday, and we ran into some folks from, where were they from? Indiana. They're from Indiana. And I said, did you imagine northern Minnesota to look like this? And they said, we had no idea. We had no idea how beautiful it was and how different it was from southern Minnesota. And,
yeah.
It's hard to imagine that it's this beautiful.
Right. Yeah. And that's like, I've ran into folks on the Superior Hiking Trail, from like all different parts of the world too, that
yeah.
like seek out coming to the North Shore, which blows my mind because like, you know, you think like, yeah, like not many people know about this. And then like you find somebody from, you know, like Germany hiking the SHT and that's really cool. But then at like you say, at the same time, you definitely run into people who are like, you have the Sawtooth Mountains, can you call them that? You know?
Yep.
Yeah. So. But it's totally cool sharing that beauty with people because Minnesota yeah. kind of has a beauty of its own, and being
completely.
Able to share that with people from all over the place is, I love it.
It's a different kind of beauty. You know, when you go out to the mountains, you've got out west, the actual mountains.
Yep.
It's this expansive, like jaw-dropping, show-stopping nature, but then you come to northern Minnesota and it's this intimate beautiful nature. It's different. And I think it's really unique from a lot of the hotspot places in the United States.
Absolutely.
It's a hidden gem, without a doubt.
That's for sure. Yep. And the further you dive into it, the more you realize how incredible of a place it actually is. So I always encourage people on the show to just go out and see what's around that corner and what's up over that bend, because you'll find some pretty incredible spots, you know, all around the state, but definitely up the shore.
Absolutely.
So.
Yep, for sure.
Now take a look at their big house, bigger than they really need it. You got the dualies on his pickup. The dealer gave him a choice, and he lost his job on the build site. Now he's struggling to feed his boys. And the red cedar grows, and the red cedar flows, and long after you're gone, it's outlasting you.
Ashley, I wanna start right from the beginning here. Now, you mentioned, you know, you didn't always live at the end of the Gunflint Trail, and, you know, you started out with an engineering degree, and you were living down in Florida. Now you're up living remotely in the wilderness, and you're the owner of the summer camp. How did this huge change happen? Could you share that story with us?
Yeah, well, it's a story. In a nutshell, I just had somebody ask me about the story the other day, and the nutshell version is it all came down to kind of a crazy week in which a lot of huddly timed things happened that made me realize I had gotten the most out of the lifestyle I was living as an engineer in Florida.
Sure.
And it was time to make a change. So, like you said, I graduated from UW-Madison with a degree in mechanical engineering, and right off the bat, I went to work for a company that sent me to Birmingham, Alabama, which is not really where I was planning on going with my life out of college, but I'm so glad I did. That was such an interesting change for me. It was so different than Minnesota, which is all I had ever really known. And I worked there for a couple of years, and then I moved to the panhandle of Florida, which is basically southern Alabama. It's very similar culture-wise. and I worked there for a couple of years as an engineer as well. And like I said, it came down to this weird week. I can kind of play out this series of events for you a little bit. But
sure.
Let's see. On like a Monday, my dad had called me. And my dad then was 62 or 63. And he called me really worried. He had extremely high blood pressure for some reason. And it was a big red flag. And I got very worried. My mom had passed away in 2013. So I was down to one parent, and anything like that really just makes me really nervous, especially when I was living so far away from him.
Sure. Yeah.
So I was really worried about that. And he was thinking, maybe you should come up here and spend some time with me. And so I already had it on my mind, like maybe I should take my 2 weeks of vacation and go to northern Minnesota. And then the next day, I got a notice slipped under my apartment door saying that the folks who owned my unit wanted to sell it. And I had to be out in 30 days.
Oh, man.
So I was like, oh, that's really not ideal. and then shortly after that, the folks at my work wanted to promote me to a more regional position, which would mean doubling down on my commitment to stay in the South.
Yep.
And travel more around the South. And then the day after that, I had a conversation with the person who I had been dating for 4 years at the time about, you know, is this the next step? What do you think? What about marriage? What about Minnesota? All of those things. Because Minnesota was always in my heart. And it wasn't in his cards. So I thought, well, there are a lot of things at play here happening in 1 week. And
right.
I just made the decision to ask for, I think I asked for a month of unpaid leave to go to Minnesota. and just kind of test the waters a little bit.
Sure.
And so I did that in the summer camp that has been in my family since 1968. Wow. Up at the end of the Gunflint Trail. It was in session at the time. So that's where I came for my month of unpaid leave.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, for the first time in many years, I got to wake up and have coffee with my dad and say goodnight in person. And it just, it made me realize, like I said before, I had gotten everything I was going to get out of my life in Florida, and it was time to make that big change. I had no idea what it would look like, but I flew back to Florida and quit my job, put my stuff into some Duluth packs, and hit the road north.
You packed them into Duluth packs. That's awesome.
I sure did. And I headed north up to the end of the Gunflint Trail, and I had planned on just staying for the winter. My dad said, why don't you spend one winter with me here, and you can figure out your engineering career after that. And so I thought, that sounds really, really nice. I'll spend the winter up there with you. And I kept meaning to look for that engineering job in the spring. And well, here we are 2 years later. I never did go back to engineering. And I fell into the summer camp that's been in my family for so many years. And it just so happened that my uncle, who owned both this boys camp that I now own and our girls camp near Bemidji, he was looking to sell the boys camp. And somewhere around that January of the winter, I moved up here. My dad and I hatched this harebrained idea. Why don't we see if we can buy it?
Yeah.
So we had our house in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, the house I grew up in. We still had that house, and we thought, well, if we sell that house, we can afford the down payment for this property and this business. And so we really did just sell it all and put everything into this family business here. So now my dad and I run the camp. We own the camp. And then my fiance, Victor, is my co-director here as well. So I think that kind of covers your question. That's the long of it.
That's incredible. Man, what a change. I mean, but
seriously.
But like, what a perfect example of just following your heart. And what an incredible story.
Well, you know, you always hear people saying, like, jump and the net will appear, or like, just make the first change and it all kind of falls into place. And that is really what did happen for me. I didn't have a plan after that first winter, and things just started to fall into place and a new path appeared. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. No, that's incredible though. And I mean, anyone that's following you on Instagram is able to see like how incredible of a life you're living up there. And for folks that aren't, following you, could you kind of paint them a little mental image of what your like current living situation is? Because I mean, anybody that's listening right now, if you want like the like most awesome cabin experience without leaving your phone, like this is what you're wanting. So
it is like the quintessential cozy cabin, I must say. But so okay, I'll paint a picture, but we need to start in Grand Marais. If everybody listening kind of knows where Grand Marais is, or if you need to look it up on a map, do that. And then you're gonna get in your car and you're gonna drive an hour north up the Gunflint Trail all the way. And so you can't drive any further. You're gonna park your car and then you're gonna get in a boat and drive your boat or paddle your canoe like another, you know, 20 minutes if you're paddling
sure.
to the Seagull River. And that's where you'll find our camp.
wow.
So that's an adventure just getting here. But once you get here, it is the most gorgeous slice of wilderness ever. We share a boundary line with a property line with the Boundary Waters Canoe Area. And my cabin is right at the heart of it. It is a 200 square foot cabin that my mom and dad and grandma built in the early 80s. And my parents have lived in that cabin as directors. My cousins have lived there as directors. And now I live there with my fiancé Victor and my dog Arlo. When I first moved up, it was just me, which was, there was more breathing room then
sure.
than there is now. But there's no running water in that cabin. We heat it with wood heat. have a little baseboard heater that in the winter, it just keeps it from freezing. It really doesn't do a whole lot.
Yep.
But it's nice because then, you know, when it's like negative 40, I could run to town without worrying about the cabin. And yeah, it's really small, but it's got everything you could possibly need.
It sounds like everything you would possibly need. Anyone looking to just escape at all, I mean, I was just relaxed just thinking about the image of this cabin and it, sharing a line with the Boundary Waters and mm-hmm. the secludedness. Oh my gosh, that sounds incredible.
It's just the right amount of secluded as well, because I have Wi-Fi. So there,
hey, there you go.
I would rather have that than running water, honestly.
Right. Well, they make water filters. And
yeah. Especially in the winter, it's good to have a connection to the outside world in January.
For sure. So, I mean, overall, was it a pretty difficult transition going from engineering to now living remotely? Or was it fairly simple since you've always kind of been around that lifestyle as well?
I feel like it would be more dramatic if I said it was really hard, but I didn't find it all that hard. And people ask me a lot, you know, how can I make this transition? Like, what suggestions would you have? And I always say, number one thing, don't do it alone.
Sure.
Whether it's like having a neighbor that you know nearby or doing it with somebody. Having my dad here made such a big difference. He's got a cabin just up the hill from me. So
nice.
He made the transition just super easy. And I've spent a lot of time up here. So it was exactly what I expected it would be. And I'm a really introverted person. So the fact that it's so secluded, it's fitting for me anyways. But
sure.
Yeah, I for me, it was like coming home. It just, this is my place. So it wasn't that challenging.
Well, that just kind of says something for your overall decision, too, because, I mean, if it felt like you were going home, I mean, that sounds like the right choice to me. So
awesome. So, you know how you always hear about soulmates?
Yeah.
I believe in soul places, and this is like my soul place. This is where I'm meant to be. I belong here.
Yep. Yeah, I definitely know what you're talking about. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I think we all have that favorite spot, and honestly, like I said before, my place is pretty much anywhere up the shore, but I do have a specific place, but unfortunately, I'm not going to disclose where that is.
that's a smart move, I would say.
Yeah. that's my nice little peaceful spot.
Keep it for yourself.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But, anyway, what's your favorite thing about living remotely? I mean, you wake up in one of the most beautiful areas and, mm-hmm. you know, get the peacefulness of the world around you. I mean, how do you pick a favorite thing even?
Seriously, that's the question that was going through my mind when you just asked that. There's so many, I love so much about it, but there is nothing better, in my opinion, when you wake up on a morning in December or January and I look out the window and there's these big like moose eyelash snowflakes falling from the sky.
Oh,
and it's maybe like, 15 degrees or something like that. Oh, that's my favorite. I just love that.
Yeah. Yep. Like the perfect winter image. Yeah. Nice cozy cabin nestled in. Yeah, totally.
I love the winter season because it's a slower pace. You're meant to, it's a very inward season. You're meant to like just contemplate and relax and recharge, get ready for spring and summer. So
that's right. Yeah.
I think if I were an animal, I'd be like a cozy house cat. So like winter's perfect for me.
There you go. Yeah, and like you were saying, winter kind of gives you that time to rejuvenate and kind of recharge and everything. And and that was actually going to be one of my questions was, you know, it may seem like a dream to be living out there, but obviously, like, there's got to be some struggles to living so far away from society. And you know, you kind of have to go that extra mile just to kind of survive. You know, what are some of the struggles of living so far away?
Yeah, you got that right. fall is kind of all about survival for the winter.
Sure.
So, I mean, actually, even summer. So pretty soon we're going to start hauling all of our firewood for the winter, which just that alone, we have a lot of people think that we split our own firewood, like cut our own firewood here from the forest behind us. We don't. We actually have it delivered. It's already split, delivered to the end of the trail, dumped off there, and then we load it onto this giant barge we have called the Barracuda.
Nice.
It's pretty cool. If you ever paddle down the Seagull River, you'll see it sitting there. There's a big pirate flag on it. It's
nice.
Pretty cool. But yeah, so we haul all of our firewood on that, and then that comes up to our dock, and we haul it up a 40-foot hill to my dad's cabin. And if we need to split it smaller, we've got a wood splitter, then we stack it all. And so that's just one of the many tasks to get ready for the winter. And that's one you want to get right. You don't want to run out of firewood in January.
For sure. Do you have a sauna?
We do have a sauna.
Is it a wood fire sauna?
Yes.
Then you have to stay well stocked. Yeah.
I'm telling you, it's crucial. So yeah, no, the sauna and my dad's wood stove and my wood stove, got to keep those going all winter. And then, you know, there's a lot of things here that I say that they're not more difficult than normal life. They're just different. You live a different lifestyle.
Sure.
But personally, for me, the one thing I found the most challenging is in January, when you've got that negative 40 degree night and you've got to walk up the 40-foot hill to the outhouse in the middle of the night. That's my least favorite thing.
But I could imagine. Sure, yeah.
It's not the worst thing in the world. I don't hate it enough to not live here.
Right,
know?
Absolutely. So, sorry. So those are some of the struggles, more or less, and like some things that you have to take into consideration coming into the seasons and everything. One thing I've always wondered about, are the shoulder seasons difficult on you as far as thaw and freeze and everything?
That is such a good question. Yes. So living here, I have learned so much about seasonal living and the importance of living in tune with the seasons. And it's so good for your health. I'll say that. Just to flow with the pace of nature and your own lifestyle.
For sure.
But the shoulder seasons are, they do pose a challenge. So in the fall, when the ice is coming in, we make sure that we've got a week to 2 weeks worth of supplies here. Because there's a period of time where the ice is unsafe to cross, but you can't boat either. Now we can walk about a half a mile to a spot on a rapids that never, freezes over.
Sure.
And we can kind of portage there, but that's not what we love doing. So
it
does pose a struggle. And then in the spring, I feel like that's even, well, for my dog Arlo, I worry the most because she's learning what the ice is.
Yep.
And so when that ice looks safe, but it's not safe, that's can be dicey. So yeah, you have to plan more in the shoulder seasons for sure.
Yeah, for sure. That's, and, you know, I did talk to Dave and Amy Freeman when I was going through the EOE program, and I asked them the same exact question, and that's like, it just like kind of baffles me because there's such, like there's that little period of time where, like you say, you can't take the boat, you can't walk across the ice, you just have to kind of ride it out, and y'all had pretty similar answers, and
hopefully someday
I can experience that, because I'd love to live remotely someday, but
and those two would know it even better than I would with their year in the boundary waters,
right?
You kind of just have to roll with the punches
for sure. So once the shoulder seasons are done, though, like, you know, you come into summertime, what is kind of your day in the life of a camp owner look like when all that stuff gets going?
It's fun. I'll tell you a funny story about this. So, over the last year, I redid our website, right? Yep. And there was something wrong with the integration with our website and our camp management software. And so I was on tech support talking to the guy, and he said, you know, you better get your web person on this. They can help you. And I said, look, I am the web person, the maintenance person, the director, the cook, like, I've got my hands in all of it. So you're talking to the web person.
Yeah. But would you like to talk to the manager? Hi, how are you doing?
Yeah, no. Hi, how you doing? That's exactly it. So you wear a lot of hats, especially at a camp like ours. We are much smaller than your average summer camp.
Sure.
Most camps are, you have a capacity of like 100 plus, and at any given time, we will only have 46 kids in our camp. So we're small. I liken it to, and probably a lot of women might understand this. You probably will too, but it's like the difference between shopping in a mall and shopping in a boutique. Like, there's fewer things at the boutique, but it's really good quality.
Yeah, so, there you go.
Yeah, that's kind of us. But in the summertime, it is all hands on deck, go, go, go. We're running activities during the weekend, in-camp activities. And during the week, all of our campers are out on Boundary Waters canoe trips or North Shore climbing trips or biking trips or Superior hiking trips. They're out doing stuff. So at the end of the weekend, we're busy packing out campers for their trips. And we get to live at this slow pace during the winter time.
Yep.
And then in the summer, it is just guns blazing, go, go, go.
Sure.
So,
and, and I mean, on top of the camp ownership and everything, you're also blogging. Do you tend to do like more blogging in the winter time, or do you still lay that on in the summertime? How do you kind of find a balance with all that?
That's so funny you ask that. Actually, if you go to my blog right now, there's a under construction sign on it.
Oh, and, really?
Yeah, kind of for that very reason. In the wintertime, I've got more time in front of a computer. But and in the summertime, I barely have a minute. But I've spent the last year blogging about what it's like living in this cabin and living up here. And now I'm thinking, well, gosh, I can only write about this cabin so much. And
sure.
I've really developed an interest in this idea of seasonal living.
Okay.
And there's so much to be said for the ways that you can live with each season.
Yep.
So that's kind of where I'm turning my blog to. That's kind of going to be the direction moving forward, how to live with these seasons. Because I think back to my engineering job and just the pace at which everybody was working, and not during the summer months when it's that kind of energy, but 12 months out of the year. And I think there might be something to take note of the seasons with that. So anyways, that's kind of where my blog is going. But right now it's just waiting for me.
Sure. No, but that's exciting. And definitely, like, you know, I've already done it once with the podcast, just taking that time to step away, just regroup, rethink, kind of, you know, let your mind go a different direction. And yeah, I definitely see a lot of positives coming from all of that. And I actually can't wait to see what comes of the future with all the seasonal stuff. So
I'll
definitely keep an eye out for that.
Thank you so much. I haven't told anybody this, really. So you guys are the first ones to hear that.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right here out your back door, everybody.
You heard it.
There you go. But, you know, getting back, though, it's the blog that you have been doing, you know, based around the cabin and just living out there has been incredible. The photos that you're sharing and the experience that you've been writing about have all been just, you know, it seems like there's something everybody can relate to. But personally, something that I love and will always love is just animals, nature, wildlife, and all that happy stuff. And it seems like you've made plenty of friends around the cabin there.
Mm-hmm.
One, though, I really want to know about is this bird with the broken beak.
Yes!
And I've seen videos of it eating right out of your hand. How did that whole bond come about?
Yeah, so all that animal stuff is never going to go away. I love animals so much. This winter... I met this bird for the very first time, or what I think is the very first time. Maybe I have met him prior to his beak injury and just didn't know it. But we've got these birds up here called Whiskey Jacks. They're also called Gray Jays, Canadian Jays, Camp Robbers. They have many names. but in the wintertime, they're very friendly up here. And I fed this bird, it might have been in October or November, for the very first time. He landed on my hand as I was hiking out in the woods, and I thought, man, your beak is really funky, dude. and I got a close look, and he has the top part of his beak completely broken off, like a clean break. Yeah. And so his bottom beak has kind of grown up and like curves up a little bit. He reminds me of like Pinocchio or something. So we named him, Geppetto.
Nice.
That's his name. And he's just hung around. He's really, really friendly. We've kind of got into a feeding routine. He can't eat seeds very well.
Sure.
So I rip pieces of bread off for him. And it's really interesting to watch how he eats it. He like scoops it up with his bottom beak, throws it in the air, and then catches it with his whole mouth. It's amazing to watch. But yeah, he is just super friendly. And then this spring, he went missing for a few days, and next time I saw him, he was with all of his babies. So that was really cool to watch. But apparently, I've learned a lot about Whiskey Jacks in the last few months.
Yep.
They have a permanent territory, so they live here. This is where Geppetto will live for the rest of his life.
Cool.
And with his mate, they mate for life, kind of like loons.
Nice.
And I don't know what they do in the summer. Please, if any of your listeners know what they do in the summer, because I don't see them hardly ever during the summer months, but they're here. So I don't know. Question mark.
Yeah. Well, if anybody has an answer, you can find Ashley on Instagram. And we haven't even touched on that yet. How can people find you on Instagram?
Yeah. People can find me on Instagram. Just my full name, Ashley Bredemus. It'll probably be in the show notes. It's hard to spell, but that's where I'm at most of the time. I love photography and I love writing, so Instagram is kind of my place.
Nice.
My link to my blog and to our summer camp, which is Birchwood Wilderness Camp, is all on Instagram as well.
Very cool. Yeah, I just got into photography and videography myself.
Cool.
I bought a DSLR camera when I decided to do this podcast, and my intentions were to start doing like, you know, interviews in really cool places and like, you know, maybe take people out into the wilderness, do interviews out there, and do something along that line, and like kind of film the experience too. And then Corona happened, so that kind of put a kibosh on that idea pretty quick. But now that we're getting back out of all the Corona stuff, I'm looking forward looking forward to being able to, you know, get out and put that camera to use how I had kind of intended for it. But
I
have a lot
here.
To learn. I have a lot to learn in photography, so maybe I should come to Birchwood for a week. And,
come. I mean, you just have to like point your camera in any direction and you'll find something photo worthy or video worthy up here. But yeah,
so
for sure.
So let's kind of talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about the camp. You mentioned that you're not a very big camp, and you also kind of talked about how you have a girls' camp in Bemidji, was it?
Yep.
Yeah, Bemidji.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but you know what does a camper get experience wise at the Birchwood Wilderness Camp? You know, every camp has. They're so unique and so awesome in their own ways, and everything just has like some, you know, unique things to offer. You happen to be right there at the Boundary Waters. I imagine that this is not like a typical camper experience. Is it more or less wildernessy? Or
it is definitely a wilderness camp. So I would say that the couple of things that are unique to us would be definitely our location, as you mentioned. Sharing a property line with the Boundary Waters is like prime real estate. So our campers can leave right from our dock and either paddle up to Saginaw or to Seagull Lake. And man, that's the gateway to so many trips right there.
For sure.
Or up into the Quetico and the Crownlands. And there's lots of, so our location's number one. That's what makes us unique. And then our size also sets us apart. But this camp, as many other camps, was built on the foundations of, there's four. The first one is the web of friendship, which is something that my grandpa came up with back in the early 60s.
Nice.
And that's this web of friendship that you develop at camp, and you can reach out in any direction at any age for support or friendship or encouragement. And that's, I was a camper at the girls' camp, and I know how true that is. I've got friends in, if I drove any direction to any state, I would have a camp friend there. That's how many camp friends I have through this web of friendship. So
Right. That's
something that we really value here, this place of connection. And then having role models, that's another big, that's one of our four tenets, is role models. We consider our staff very carefully, and because we have to hire so few, we can be really choosy with who we do hire. And then the third one is life skills. We don't want to just teach kids something that's only going to be good for their school days. We want something that they're going to have for the rest of their life.
Sure.
So you put a paddle in a kid's hand and send them out into the boundary waters. Not only are they learning the lifelong skill of canoeing, they're also going to be learning things like teamwork, and they're going to build confidence in themselves when they're out with a group of, you know, six other boys in the boundary waters.
Absolutely.
So life skills, both soft and hard skills. And then the fourth one, which is we've added it to my grandpa's original three, is a love of the wilderness, a respect for the environment.
Absolutely.
We really care about that. The boundary waters is quite literally our home.
Yeah.
So I think when you start somebody at such a young age in the boundary waters, that's with them for the rest of their lives. And they've got this innate respect for the wilderness.
Absolutely.
So that's kind of what we're all about here at Birchwood. We like to have a good time and be safe while we're doing it.
Absolutely.
And see all that Northern Minnesota has to offer.
Yeah, that's great. And yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I've worked at summer camps myself. That web is never ending. I personally feel like everybody should have an experience at a camp, whether you're working or you're a camper or what it might be, because there's so much to gain from a summer camp and just being around that atmosphere and that connection, and to take that connection and that web and, you know, go further with it and ultimately, like, you know, provide these campers with an opportunity to develop these skills. It does go lifelong, and they carry it with them their whole life. Cause I have friends that, you know, I never knew that they were a camper, but I could have almost told you, you know, before I did know that they were, because of the way that the skills that they had and the everyday social skills too. And it just goes up and beyond. It's never ending. And then I love that you incorporated the respect for the wilderness, because you're absolutely correct. If you put this in the kids' minds right away, and if you expose them to such the just raw beauty of Minnesota and what the boundary waters has to offer and everything else, that connection and that respect factor, and, you know, it happens really quick,
and it does
tend to go, you know, for a full lifetime. So
100%. And I think oftentimes we think about, you know, respect for our wilderness in a way like, what can we do for our wilderness? We can clean it up. We can buy sustainably, low waste. Like, there's all these things.
Right.
But the other angle that I like to look at this, especially with our campers, is first, what can the wilderness do for you? Because you realize all of these amazing things that you can give credit to the wilderness for. And then you want to give back. So these kids go out into the wilderness and they see, oh, wow, this wilderness is giving me all of these friends and this confidence and these life skills and these wonderful memories, and you care for it in a way that you didn't before. But I love what you said about camp friends. Isn't that funny? Like, you meet somebody that's also been to camp and instantly have something in common, even if it wasn't the same camp.
For sure. Yeah, totally. And everywhere. I've ran into people in Australia that have worked at summer camps. It's like just an immediate bond. I love that. Yeah.
I think it's because summer camps create this sense of shared purpose.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
That tends to unite people more than anything.
Absolutely.
So.
Yep.
Yep.
So the camp experience definitely goes up and beyond just the actual camper's experience. For anybody that, you know, has worked at a camp or you know, is looking to be a counselor, what kind of experience does your staff usually get working at Birchwood?
So I'm glad you asked that, because we, like I said before, our staff is one of our pillars. And we always say our number one customer, that's going to be our campers, right? But yep. Right after that, that's our staff.
For sure.
We want to make sure that our staff has a really good experience, because we understand our staff, they're of college age. These are big years
that
can make lasting change, lasting impact on them. So they're really in this leadership role. And we like for them to help us plan different trips. We, you know, we're not only teaching trip planning to our campers, but we're giving that responsibility to our staff as well, with our training beforehand. So we like to give them responsibilities here.
Yeah.
We trust them. We want them to be that role model for our campers. So we've got campers or staff that are now of age, they have their own kids, and they paddle past camp and come on up and see how it's going. We just had that
That's
happen
awesome.
Last summer. A camper from, or a staff member from when my dad was a director here, just paddled by and walked up the steps and came up to say hi. And we just love that so much. So there's quite a legacy with our staff here. And we really do care about their experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. Do they ever get the opportunity to go out into the Boundary Waters and recreate or climb or hike or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, on their day off, the Boundary Waters is their oyster. They can go anywhere and we'll pack them out. So,
hey, if that doesn't make you want to work there in itself, I don't know what will.
Absolutely. But yep.
That's great. Do you happen to use the camp for, like, hosting any other, like, events or gatherings or anything like that? I know some of the camps I've worked at have done, like, yoga retreats or, like, you know, chef camps or something like that. Do you do anything like that?
Yeah, we've got our very first yoga retreat happening this August.
Nice.
So we've been building this massive yoga deck that we're so excited about.
That's incredible.
Which it's cool because it's on rainy days, we're going to be able to gather in there for camp things as well. So it's multi-purpose, but we're hosting a yoga retreat this August, and we're really excited about that. We'd like to do more of those. That particular retreat sold out in 7 minutes. So I think we're on to something.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah. Yep. But, and then in the future, so, okay, let me back up. Camp ends the first week of August.
Okay.
And if any of you listening have been up to the Boundary Waters, you might know that August and September are like some of the most amazing months to be here.
Yes.
Minus June and July. So we've got this time when our campers are back in school that we can utilize. So we would love to host, I would personally love to host a women's retreat up here and take women into the Boundary Waters. We'd love to have outdoor companies come here for team retreats. The opportunities are endless, and we've got such a great space. So in the future, we'd love to do more of that stuff.
That's awesome. Yeah, good to know. And for anybody listening out there, I mean, there you go.
Yep.
keep it in mind for your next retreat and check it. Check, you know, follow the social media and everything, because these retreats are awesome. The yoga retreats at summer camps and any of the family camps and stuff like that, it gives you kind of that camp experience in a sense, while also being able to, you know, connect with your passion, whether that be, you know, yoga or whatever it is. But that's, yeah,
yep.
Check it out, people, because, yeah, these great, great things going on.
About 20 years, not quite 3 o'clock in time.
Ashley, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. We're getting down to our last couple questions here, and mm-hmm. I just what a great conversation this has been so far. But before we kind of wrap up, like I say, I have a couple more questions. So, you know, you decided to take a huge leap when you moved back to Minnesota. You bought the camp, and obviously that in itself just brought endless rewards to your life, but I mean, it was a big step. What would you say the most rewarding thing was about the decision that you made?
About the decision that I made, it was without a doubt the empowerment that I got from it. Nice. My whole life, I've never really made a big decision that altered the course of my life up until this decision. I've had a lot of changes happen in my life, but they always seem to kind of just happen to me. I didn't create the change myself.
Sure.
So making this decision, it was really empowering to know that I am the reason that I'm here right now. I made this choice. I would say the empowerment from it is the best thing I've got from the decision part of it.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's like the icing on the cake, you know, you created all this incredible happiness for your life, and to just cap it all off, you get to sit back and feel really good about it. Like,
and there's definitely days where I'm like, oh gosh, did I make the right choice? I just bought a summer camp. What am I doing? Like, this is a rotten first year to be in business with Corona and everything. But at the end of the day, I just see the next 50 years up here, and I'm not as worried. So
it'll be great. And you know that you on your social media, you provide so many words of encouragement and advice. Oh. And it's really great for anybody that is looking to just, like I say, get that nice cabin feel, the words of encouragement, and just it brings a lot of peace to anybody that tunes in. So definitely go follow Ashley and everything she's doing on Instagram and follow, you know, just everything. It's awesome. But do you have any, and this is the final question, do you have any words of encouragement or advice for anybody that is looking to make a big leap in their life or to make a big change as you did?
Yeah, I have a lot of advice, but just advice from my own experience, right? It's not going to fit everybody, but in my experience, it all comes down to timing. And this is really annoying for me to say this, but you have to feel it, not just in your gut, but in your body. Like, that sounds woo-woo, I know. But you really have to internalize it when you're thinking about a big change, not just thinking about it in your mind, but feel it in your heart and your gut and your whole body. Whenever I've had a change come up in my life, it's, or been presented with like a direction to go or a decision to make, it always comes down to, well, there's all these other options, but my gut's telling me this.
Yeah.
My body's telling me this. This is the right way to go. And then you can notice these other what ifs, questions, options kind of take a back seat, and you can follow that one path. And if none of that is coming to you, if you're not thinking about this one thing that's standing out, sit with it a little bit longer. And again, this is going to sound airy-fairy, but go sit in the woods, put your bare feet on the ground, and just sit with it for a minute. I think we're in such a rush these days to do, and the time to sit and reflect should not be discounted.
Absolutely. So
that would be my advice, as once you get that ping that this is the direction or this is the right change, you really have to put one foot in front of the other courageously and go for it, because there's going to be a million things that are telling you you shouldn't be doing this. But if you really have that feeling in your body that that's the right decision, just put one foot in front of the other and go for it.
Absolutely. I love it. Great answer, actually.
Good. Okay.
I love it. Every single one of the questions has been answered just perfect today. I thank you so much. This has been so wonderful. And, you know, something I do on every show before I let the guests go, I give you an opportunity to plug or shout out or do anything you'd like to for personal stuff. If you have anything you'd like to plug or shout out, by all means, now is the time. So,
gosh, I think we've covered like Birchwood Wilderness Camp. Our girls' camp is Camp Birchwood for Girls, and that's what their handle is on our handles on social media and our website and everything. And then my personal Instagram, but no, those are the main things. And then if the Boundary Waters feels like your home as well, Save the Boundary Waters org is near and dear to my heart, fighting to protect the Boundary Waters. So those are kind of the highlights of me and where you can find me.
Awesome. Well, that's great. Yeah, go ahead and follow Ashley on Instagram, and while you're at it, go stop over at the Out Your Back Door page as well. And we have Minnesota based adventure videos and all sorts of Minnesota content going up on the website. We also are getting into some new events and gathering type stuff, so be on the lookout for some potential hiking and adventuring opportunities in the near future here. So Ashley, thank you again so much. It has been an absolute pleasure talking to you today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Jace. This was such a wonderful afternoon. I've been pacing back and forth from the cabin with Arlo next to me. And it's just, thank you so much. And thank you to everybody listening for tuning in and continue tuning in to Jace.
Absolutely. Well, that's Ashley Bredmus. Everybody, you have a wonderful day. We're signing off.
You know exactly what's lurking out there. Brother, you can see it on the news every night. And the village that it takes to raise our kids is afraid to come outside. In a red cedar grove, red cedar flows, and long after you're gone, it's outlasting you. Less than you.